Knightsbridge Library presents LeMay's Last Case by Gordon Beasley. Read by Sean Hurley. Chapter 1. The Body. It was a dark and stormy night. The woman, Gabrielle Weasley, lay at Detective LeMay's feet, muddy and soaked from the thunderstorm, curled on the grass in an old blue dress. The pen in her hand meant that she'd been writing in her notebook, as always. LeMay supposed the woman had most likely suffered a heart attack or stroke, a natural death. Master LeMay could think of no one who would murder the unknown poet. She was friendless, besides, without enemies for that matter, a fragmentary being, hardly alive to begin with. He swung the bronze beam of his flashlight over the dark, green orchards.
Listening to atoms, motion, and the void. My name is Sherwin Sleeves, and I live a little north of here in the town of Lemon. To get to Lemon, you have to take the Lemon Highway and cross over the rust of the Lemon Bridge, which spans the yellow bright shoals of the Lemon River. At the center of town, the road spins a shadowy rotary around the green lawn of Lemon Park, and stores and shops of all different shapes and materials stand quietly at the edges. A brick barber shop, an old trolley car diner, a bank dressed up in white granite and painted pillars. At the downward spill of Lemon Street sits a weathered and crooked old barn. This is the Lemon Cafe, and I go there twice a week for the heart therapy of their espresso drinks. I get a tiny, burning thimble of motor oil and settle happily in the back alcove, near a tumbling shelf of old novels and magazines, which one is free to take, if one likes. Despite the heavy industry of coffee, there is still the faintest whiff of wheat fields, of horses, for it used to be a stable, and on the walls are hung the worn and happy remnants of those days. Horseshoes, saddles, leather yokes. On a recent visit to the cafe, I was interested to note that one of the two chairs in my library alcove was taken, and not by a tourist or a familiar customer. No, it was Harriet Beasley, without question the most exotic and reclusive citizen in all of Lemon. She wore an antique museum-prop gown of blue and grey, and on her head, a strange, pillow-like hat festooned with plastic birds. Despite these, my eye was most taken by the large cardboard box on her lap. As I sipped my small accelerant toward my familiar spot, it was easy enough to surmise that Harriet must be searching among the discarded novels for one of the detective stories her late husband, Gordon, had written. Perhaps one was missing from her collection. She herself was rumored to be an extremely fine poet, a modern Emily Dickinson, self-exiled, and bizarre. Though she had never published a single line, her reputation most certainly preceded her. A decade earlier, as she sank into a depression, her husband, Gordon, had secretly stolen her white notebook full of poems and presented it to his own publisher for a private evaluation. The publisher immediately acknowledged its value and sought to represent the beautiful work. But Harriet, in her grief and shock at this trespass, refused to believe the publisher was sincere. Gordon had concocted the whole thing, she thought. It was an elaborate enticement to draw her out of the darkness. In fact, she took it as confirmation of her lack of authenticity, as evidence of her failure as a poet. The publisher, regardless, continued to exert all manner of covetous pressures, and Harriet's reputation soared in the friction of his ongoing want and her steady denial. I myself had seen her only once before, seated in the orchard in the descending valley at the edge of her estate, infamous white notebook flapping in her lap. She was leaning upon a stony monument, most certainly revising one of her poems. In fact, there were others of these pillars rising among the trees, and after inquiring in town, I learned that the Beasleys kept a cemetery in the lower orchard for their people. But with Gordon's recent death, the Emily Dickinson Act had come to an end. Harriet was forced into town to pay bills, to collect groceries, to come to the coffee shop, even to have conversations, as I soon learned, taking my seat beside her. I am guessing, she said in a whisper, that you are familiar with my husband's dreary books. I nodded slowly. I would imagine, I said, that everyone in town has read one or two. Why do you imagine that? She shot back. It was well known that Gordon featured the town and its citizens in his stories, and I said so. The murders take place in familiar spots around the village, I said, down near the river, at the mills. I was not aware, Harriet said, softly. In the books, for example, I continued, Gordon called me Herman Leaves, a wandering old man, white hair and beard, dragging in the puddles. Gordon thought you should have a haircut, she said, frowning at my obvious current need. But did he write such opinions in the books? Oh, yes, I said. In any book where Herman Leaves makes an appearance, you can be certain that Gordon will establish the need for a haircut. The books are full of such opinions and commentary. I realized, at this moment, that Harriet probably did not know of her own small role in her husband's books. Gordon called her Gabrielle Weasley, and she was forever huddling in the miserable meadows, furiously revising her poems. Harriet sighed and lifted the cover off the cardboard box to reveal a sheaf of typewritten pages. Before he died, Gordon made me promise to read his last book, she said. LeMay's Last Case is what he called it. Of course I would have read it, no question, had he not further prepared me for the book. He said, my dear, there is a woman in the book curiously like you. Her name is Gabrielle Weasley, an eccentric poet who writes bad poems in the hillside muck. My dear, Gabrielle Weasley would seem to meet a very bad end. Harriet glared at me that we might share in the horror of this appalling treatment. His parting gift to me was this, she said bitterly. In his last book, he has the lovely heart to murder me by proxy. Obviously, I will never read it now, and I told him so. But Gordon thought that you might, Mr. Sleeves. I'll be happy to read it as soon as it's published, I offered. Oh, it'll never be published, she whispered. Of all things, Gordon couldn't finish it. The final sentence with his trademark twist. And he had no idea. "My dear," he said, "I fear I cannot understand my own riddles." So he begged me to read it, to solve the case of my own murder, that I might complete his wretched book. She now handed the cardboard box to me and began to collect her things, apparently leaving. "So this is our compromise," she said. "I'm free to bury the book if it can't be finished, but if, somehow, the last line can be assembled." She now peered grimly at me. "Then I suppose I agreed to hand it over to his publisher, which, dreary gentleman, as it happens, I am reluctantly meeting with this afternoon." I looked forlornly down at the typewritten sheets on my lap. "Are you asking me to write the last sentence of Gordon's book?" I asked. "Not I," she hissed. "Gordon is asking. This is his idea. If I were to ask you anything, it would be to do the opposite. Although I should tell you, in all fairness," she said, reluctant to reveal this detail, "that it was you who did it. That Mr. Herman Leaves is the murderer. So, if you would be so kind as to reveal how and why it was that you killed me, you would make Gordon a very happy dead person indeed, and me quite the contrary on all counts."
Say she's not lost, but I know she's a ghost. She's a ghost, she's a ghost, she's not coming back. She's a ghost, she's a ghost, she's a ghost. No matter what she should be feeling, just can't help but smile. Now the sun is coming up and it's time to start the day anew. Say I'm not lost, I could give.
Leaving no doubt of her desire, Harriet had asked me to meet her at Gordon's graveside at 4 o'clock amidst the apple trees of the Beasley Family Cemetery. Nothing formal, she said. She would simply be tucking a bit of pulp into the earth. After the burial, she would march up to the house and, quite happily, disappoint Gordon's publisher with the news that the book could not be satisfactorily completed. I got another hot thimble of coffee, returned to my seat in the alcove, and began to read LeMay's Last Case. Chapter 1. The Body. It was a dark and stormy night. The woman, Gabrielle Weasley, lay at Detective LeMay's feet, muddy and soaked from the thunderstorm, curled on the grass in an old blue dress. The pen in her hand meant that she'd been writing in her notebook, as always. LeMay supposed the woman had most likely suffered a heart attack or stroke, a natural death. Master LeMay could think of no one who would murder the unknown poet. She was friendless, besides, without enemies for that matter, a fragmentary being hardly alive to begin with. He swung the bronze beam of his flashlight over the dark, rainy orchards. Her famous white notebook would be here somewhere, he knew. But he didn't trouble himself overly. Not every death was a murder. He checked the woman's pulse again, the cold, soft skin. He gazed toward the dark forest. Ambulance lights would soon splash the woods with swirls of red. And then the EMTs, charging through the haze with their traveler's gurney and medical field kits. He kept his fingers on her neck, and when the lightning flashed, he scanned the ground. Where was that damned book of hers? In the next flickering strike, Detective LeMay was startled to spy the grim outline of a man crossing the upper ridge. It was Herman Leaves, bent over his walking stick, long wet hair dragging in the dirt. LeMay spun urgently now on his knees and patted the ground. Then he rolled the body back and felt beneath. Another moment searching. The white notebook was not there. He sat again beside the dead woman, returned his fingers to her neck. If the notebook had been stolen, the woman had been murdered. He felt sure of it. He would wait until morning, and then, quite early, pay a visit to the old man with the much too long hair. At the end of page one, I sipped down the dregs of my coffee and sat in the unpleasantness of my predicament. Gordon had asked me to finish the book. Harriet had asked me to not. If I wrote the sentence, I would directly harm her. If I refused, I would dishonor his final wishes. I checked my watch and suffered at the time. I had no choice but to skim rapidly through the text, hoping to find some impossible third solution. I took the final page of LeMay's Last Case into my hand and read it out loud. Something had been drawing Detective LeMay to the gravesite day after day. Perhaps it was his own creeping sense of mortality, arriving as it had in the form of a sharp pain, slowly building within his chest for weeks, a kind of disabling pressure that left him exhausted and reflective. But he was also at the grave because he yearned for the impossible, that in cracking the case he might undo the crime and bring the dead back to life, bring her back to life. As to demonstrate, his fingers began to scratch the soil above the grave, as though eventually he might reach down and take her hand and pull her warm and vital from the coffin, like a sleeping princess. His fingers went deeper, and he felt something hard down there in the dirt, something that should not be there. LeMay knew instantly that it was the poet's missing notebook, and, further, that whoever had buried it had killed her. It was at this moment that Herman Leaves appeared from behind the grave. The old man's long hair danced in the wind. Like a serpent, he crouched forward across the wet earth. "You!" LeMay cried. "It was you who killed Gabrielle Weasley. You who buried her notebook here." Herman Leaves said nothing, but hovered slowly closer. The pain in the detective's chest bloomed, and LeMay observed a trickling weakness, as though the blood was pouring out across his body in a spreading, warm, electric wave. He was no longer seated by the stone, but his eyes had dimmed, and he toppled down on the earth nearby. The old man knelt down beside him and whispered, "The last thing she did, as she lay dying, was to write down the identity of the murderer in her final poem." "So that's why you buried the book," LeMay gasped. The detective struggled to breathe against the blinding pressure at his chest. Herman Leaves took the white notebook from the weakened hands of the detective. "It was you," LeMay whispered again. "It was you." But by the time the old man had opened the book, Detective LeMay was already gone. He never heard the poem's indictment, never knew how his last case really ended. But Herman Leaves persisted and read the last poem out. A benediction, last rites, a song. Dot, dot, dot. I folded the last page of Gordon's novel into my pocket and placed the greater portion of the manuscript back in the box. As I left the Lemon Cafe and headed first across the grass of Lemon Park and then over the rust of the Lemon Bridge, heading for the Beasley Orchard, for the Beasley Graveyard, I knew exactly how the book should end, not in any sentence I or Gordon could craft, but with Harriet's own words, if she was willing. Even so, I had no idea if I had the heart to ask her, as of course, whatever lay within that last poem might be the most damaging, the cruelest twist of all.
"I'm leaving, here I go. I can't see you no more. It's 60, there's a sweet breeze. There are leaves on the floor. It's only been a while since I've known you, my dear. But no one that I met then ever came around here." Of wandering. shaking to the ground.
It was a bright and beautiful summer afternoon, with cold high swirls of blue and red brushing the cloud forms as I made my way across the ridge above the Beasley orchards. There were birds singing below and darting here and there, hummingbirds, sparrows, goldfinches. I gazed down the draping purple hillside and spied her resting among the gravestones and apple trees. I descended toward her through the wildflowers, slowly, careful of the ponderous black and yellow bumblebees. The wind blew from above, the bees swung on the blossoms, and a colorful perfume stirred. And in the humming of the bees, and that mixing sweetness of birdsong and wildflower, I came to stand beside her. She stood with her white notebook tightly held, eyes closed, before her husband's grave. Into the fresh rectangle of her husband's plot, Harriet had dug a small hole, and as I handed her the cardboard box, she knelt down into the dirt. She buried it neatly and brushed the surface to blend away the disturbance. "Thank you for trying," she said, and slowly collapsed upon the ground, as though exhausted, as though peace of a gloomy sort had come at last. It was here, I suppose, that I was meant to make my exit. But as I began to turn, I saw her eyes close and the white notebook tumble free of her fingertips. The birds sang above us in the blushing cradle of the tree, and I couldn't help but slip forward across the grass to fetch the notebook quietly into my hands. I unfolded the last page of her husband's novel and set it in the margin of her book, and then, with my pen, began to silently copy the first line of her final poem into the last line of his last book, one commending directly upon the other, one falling into completion, that the other might rise. When I began to read the last page out loud, her body shook once in acknowledgement, and then she lay quiet on the grass, wide eyes startling in the haze of the birds and twinkling blossoms, hands shaking in the soft electrocution of life. And when I reached the final line, where Gordon's novel and her poem came into perfect resemblance, she heaved onto her side and began to dig slowly in the dirt to recover the cardboard box. Perhaps, when I left, she would take their two completed books back to the house and present them to the waiting publisher. Or, perhaps, in a bright new fury, she would bury them both together in a place only she knew. Gabrielle Weasley could not be saved in Gordon's book, but perhaps Harriet could be saved from her own, and so Gordon could not help but reach out one last time through the soil, and with a final twist written by his wife, end the book he couldn't, that she might start the life she hadn't yet. I took the final page of LeMay's Last Case into my hand and read it out loud. It was at this moment that Herman Leaves appeared from behind the grave. The old man's long hair danced in the wind. Like a serpent, he crouched forward across the wet earth. "You," LeMay cried, "it was you who killed Gabrielle Weasley. You who buried her notebook here." Herman Leaves said nothing, but hovered slowly closer. The pain in the detective's chest bloomed, and LeMay observed a trickling weakness, as though the blood was pouring out across his body in a spreading, warm, electric wave. He was no longer seated by the stone, but his eyes had dimmed, and he toppled down on the earth nearby. The old man knelt down beside him and whispered, "The last thing she did, as she lay dying, was to write down the identity of the murderer in her final poem." "So that's why you buried the book," LeMay gasped. The detective struggled to breathe against the blinding pressure at his chest. Herman Leaves took the white notebook from the weakened hands of the detective. "It was you," LeMay whispered again. "It was you." But by the time the old man had opened the book, Detective LeMay was already gone. He never heard the poem's indictment, never knew how his last case really ended. But Herman Leaves persisted and read the last poem out. A benediction, last rites, a song. "The boat never sank. I just dove down, took one last breath for company. Every line another nail, every word a coffin. And so this one is a breath. It's my very last one. It's been my death. It's a goldfinch, and it's lovely, and it's always almost leaving.
This one is a breath. It's your very last one. It's been your death. It's a goldfinch, and it's lovely. It's always leaving. Out of love.
been listening to atoms, motion, and the void.